U.S. Planned Parenthood is promising to challenge the ban with a lawsuit, but the officials with the state's branch of the group have not yet settled on whether to go through the courts or the ballot. It doesn't matter whether you're rich or poor, black or white, health care in the U.S. is mediocre. The biggest ever study of the nation's health care quality shows that all classes of Americans get roughly equal and equally mediocre treatment. The survey of nearly 7,000 patients dealt only with people in urban areas, rural areas may be worse. It showed the patients overall got only 55% of the recommended steps for top quality care. Blacks and Hispanics fared slightly better than whites, women slightly ahead of men. Health experts blame the poor care and a system overburdened and fragmented doesn't keep close track of patients with multiple conditions. George Bush today rejecting calls to roll back the sign-up deadline for Medicare's prescription drug benefit. He admits that many seniors are confused by the private covered plans being offered, but he says the elderly need to realize now is the time to make a choice. Critics have been denouncing the program as a hopelessly confusing jumble for seniors and a giveaway to big drug companies. They're calling for the May 15th deadline to be relaxed, but Bush says the deadline's needed to make sure that recipients sign up. General John Abizaid insists Iraq is not tipping towards civil war, but he says it's essential that a unified government be formed there soon. The Central Command Chief tells Congress most Iraqis want to hold Iraq together, not tear it apart, although with the increasing sectarian violence, not everyone agrees with that. Meanwhile, three military officers say another 700 U.S. soldiers heading to Iraq for extra security during the upcoming Ashura religious holiday. This is Air America Radio News.
good evening, Truth Seekers. Malloy here on Air America Radio. Thanks for tuning in. I've had too much jet travel in the past 48 hours. I hate to fly to begin with, but enough. We're back in Atlanta after a quick trip to Wisconsin, and I really want to thank the Young Democrats, University of Wisconsin, at the Whitewater campus for inviting me to speak last night, especially the young man who I believe organized most of it, Adam. And thanks to Brian and Lee at the Mike 92.1 for hosting a meet and greet at Hawks Bar and Grill in Madison. And a really special thanks to all of you who came out to get together a little bit yesterday at both of those events. It was a lot of fun. I really do appreciate the fact that so many people showed up. I'm not real good at, getting together with people in the business. I mean, going out and making speeches and stuff. I know a lot of people do it just fine, but I don't know. When somebody comes up and says, I really like what you do, I don't know. It's hard for me to take a compliment. How about you? Are you the same way? You know what I'm talking about. Maybe it's the nature of talk radio. I don't know. I don't know what it is. But it was so nice to talk last night at University of Wisconsin Whitewater campus. Boy, we had a full house there. The room was jammed. And the people who were there, I am so impressed. I'm impressed by how dedicated they are to Democratic Party principles, how much they're dedicated to their senator, Russ Feingold, and how bright they are, how determined these people are to somehow turn this Bush crime family out into the street. And they gave me just a wonderful, wonderful welcome, and I do thank all of you. The folks at Hawks, the same way, a bar and grill in downtown Madison that was just full of warmth and good cheer on Tuesday when I got there, and it was just a lot of fun. And thanks to everybody who made it so much fun. You can send me my check for $35,000. As soon as you can. Oh, wait a minute. No, that's not me. That's Tweety Bird over at MSNBC, right? Yeah. No, we do this stuff for free. Just as long as the airplane fare is paid for. I'd rather drive, frankly, but that takes forever. So we're back. Thanks to Peter Werby and Laura Flanders for taking care of the program the last two nights. Thanks, guys, gals. I really appreciate it. I get a lot of emails about Peter and Laura, about how good they are, and why aren't they on this network 5 nights a week or 5 days a week. I have no idea. When they finally get rid of me, they need to bring in Peter or Laura for sure.
Yes. I just wanted to thank everybody who brought the cute little things for Molly. There's whoever provided the little tiny farm animals. She played with them tonight in the bathtub, and she kept going, cow, cow. So she loved the little cows, and she loved the little, it's some sort of fez that someone brought her.
It's a Persian hat. Persian hat, right.
And a Donald Duck. Or Daffy Duck book
right.
About impeachment or something.
Yeah, that was really nice. We got a lot of people brought CDs and T-shirts and stuff that they want me to look at and bring back, have Kathy look at, maybe talk about at some point on the air, and we will definitely do that. So enough said. I just want to thank everybody who made it just an excellent, excellent trip. The support for Air America in the upper Midwest is absolutely it's amazing. I don't know why it's amazing, but it is. It's amazing. Any state that can produce both Russ Feingold and James Sensenbrenner, I don't know, man. It's progressive movement that really began in Wisconsin and Joe McCarthy. It's amazing. It's just amazing. But the folks that showed up at the university last night and the folks that showed up at Hawks, thank you all very much. You really made me feel like I'm doing something worthwhile. I appreciate it. Thank you. Thanks a lot. All right. If we have a theme on tonight's program, Truth Seekers, it's parlor games. We're going to have some sound clips from Simple Scotty and this psychopathic Rumsfeld. Just a couple from each. No big deal. It looks like Rumsfeld has been dipping into the brown ass to get it, and will examine what Simple Scotty calls Washington babble. That could be in reference to Bush's latest speeches, but anyway, we'll have a couple of quotes from him. And coming up here very quickly, an incredible collection of quotes from various war lovers in media and government that Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting has collected. These are quotes that were made shortly after our invasion of Iraq 3 years ago. You know, we're coming up on the three-year, I hate to use the term anniversary. That sounds like when people get married, right? The three-year date of our invasion of a country that had done nothing to us. On the 19th, I believe, is the day. Oddly, today is the Ides of March. And you know what the soothsayer told Caesar, to beware the Ides of March. And also, just a little bit of cheesy stuff. The latest scandal, one of Bush's hand-picked advisors was boosting stuff off Target stores, right? This is the third one now in Bush's inner circle up there that's been busted on criminal charges. That may explain the snappiness of Pickle's wardrobe here lately, right? So all in all, a lot of stuff on the menu tonight. Stick around for as much of it as you can stand, all right? Over the past few days, when was it? Was it last weekend or maybe Monday? The photograph on the cover of the New York Times, full-color photograph of an Iraqi man named Ali Shalal Qaisi. He was the one in the infamous photograph of the hooded man standing up on the crate with the electrodes attached to his hands. Remember that? I'm quoting here from bradblog.com, and something written by David Edwards, blogging at Bradblog. This guy, Ali Qaisi, was the mayor of a town near Baghdad before he was arrested and taken to the Abu Ghraib prison. While he was there, like so many other people who were there, he was subjected to torture, including electrocution. He's quoted as saying, I felt my eyes popping out. Once I bit my tongue and blood started coming out of my mouth. And there's more, but why upset all of us with the graphic details of what we do now as a fascist, imperialist country? You know, why get into it? Well, not us, but I mean the people who run this country. This man, Ali Qaisi, underwent psychological and physical abuse techniques developed by the CIA, perfected at Guantanamo by this sick son of a bitch, this General Miller, who should be cashiered and tossed on his ass out of the army, and then charged with criminal offenses and locked up. Of course, General Miller was operating under orders from Donald Rumsfeld. They both should be put in the dock, shouldn't they? Either that, or you and I are going to sit back and say, okay, well, that's cool now. We torture people. It doesn't make any difference what they've done or didn't do. We torture the bastards, and when we finally realize they haven't done anything, we turn them loose. This is what these people have turned this country into. This General Miller developed his torture techniques at Guantanamo, and then he farmed out his torture techniques to U.S. detention centers and secret prisons all over the planet. That's another thing we do now. We have a gulag, just like the Soviet Union had a gulag under Stalin, under Khrushchev. We have a gulag now. This is who we are. The New York Times initially reported that Ali Qaisi was a prisoner in that picture. Media have produced only a few articles on this horrifying story, but how many articles have been written now about the fact that the Times may have misreported the exact photo in which this tortured individual was pictured? Now, during this man's imprisonment, his wounded hand was stomped on by a U.S. soldier, and it got infected. It's now deformed. And that hand makes it easy to identify him in photos. We'll have more of this in a second. This is unbelievable. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Every father's daughter, every mother's son, the only thing the same is death ain't for anyone.
You're listening to The Mike Malloy Show on Air America Radio. The following is a message from Brutus at the National Disaster Search Dog Foundation.
Last October, three buildings collapsed. I was called in to help. Two little kids were missing. I looked everywhere. Then I found them. They were crying. We all were.
Be part of the search. Call 1-888-4-K-9-HERO or visit searchdogfoundation.org. Made possible by Searchdog USA.
A good news story from AliveGoodNews.com.
I'm passionate about two things, motorcycles and my grandchildren. But for the past 3 years, I've suffered from arthritis. The pain caused me to lose strength in my arms, and I couldn't pick up my grandchildren. My doctor suggested I try Aleve, and I definitely noticed the difference. With the pain gone, I've got the energy to pick up my grandchildren and have fun. It's fantastic.
Aleve invites you to share your good news at AliveGoodNews.com.
Use it directed for minor arthritis pain.
Microphone, and that makes him dangerous. It's more Mike Malloy on Air America Radio.
So Ali Kaisi, the man in the photograph that has become an iconic photo of the Bush administration's attitude toward people that That it wants to what? That it wants to conquer? That it wants to destroy? You know, I don't even know anymore. I if I ever did have any answers, they're gone. All I have are more questions, like, why are we continuing to put up with this regime? But anyway, there he is. There was his picture with the hood off on the front page of New York Times. And the big deal now in cyberspace is, oh, the New York Times got something wrong. They're just, according to Brad Blog, there's scores of articles have been written about the fact that the Times may have misreported the exact photo in which this man was pictured. However, during Ali Shalal Qaisi's imprisonment, his wounded hand was infected after U.S. soldiers stomped on it. And as reported in the video that's at Bradblog, you can see it, the deformed hand makes him easier to identify in the photos. Now, that is preamble to this. CNN, Kyra Phillips, the woman who comes on immediately after, what's her name? I can't even think of her name anymore. Russia's ex-girlfriend.
That would be Darren Kagan.
Yeah, Darren Kagan. Oh, God. Talk about walking wounded. Anyway, Kyra Phillips comes on after Darren Kagan. And the other day she interviewed, or was it today? I think it was today. She interviewed the Salon.com author Michael Scherer, who is challenging the New York Times assertion that it was, in fact, Ali Qaisi in that most infamous of the Abu Ghraib hooded man on the box photos, okay? CNN's interview focused on an error made by the Times, possibly. Mr. Qaisi's claim that he was tortured in Abu Ghraib and that he appeared in one or more of the hooded man on the box photos has not been challenged. All of the attention on mistakes in reporting may taint this man's reputation and hurt his efforts to bring attention to the atrocities being committed in our name by the Bush crime family. But do you see what's going on here? The issue, all of a sudden, is whether or not the Times published the wrong hooded man photo. The man in question was hooded and tortured and electrocuted. But all of a sudden, all these hotshot writers on the internet are challenging the Times photo. Now, okay, fine. But why don't the hotshot writers address the atrocities being committed in our name by the Bush crime family? At one point in the interview, Kyra Phillips, and you can watch the video, if you go to Brad Blog, where else is it? Just go to bradblog.com. It's there. Kyra Phillips actually asked this question of the writer from Salon.com. Quote, are these prisoners trying to capitalize on these pictures? Are they looking for opportunities to make money? End quote. Jesus. God. Yeah, Kyra, that's what they're doing, you twit. They're just trying to make some money, Kyra, like you. I saw that video and I thought, oh, for Christ's sake, how much lower can American media go? How much lower can media go? You want to know how much lower? March 19th marks the third anniversary of the decision by this pissant in the White House to invade a country that had done nothing to us, murder people by the thousands, send hundreds and now thousands of American soldiers to an early death, wound thousands of Americans who will carry physical and psychological scars for the rest of their lives, as will their families, wound tens of thousands of Iraqis, blowing off arms, legs, setting up civil war, setting up car bomb situations where thousands of people are dying, scores are dying every day now. This is what Bush has done. This is what this little posseur in the White House has done and continues to do. Now, 3 years ago, immediately after the invasion, there was a whole raft of comments by these right-wing and not-so-right-wing sons of bitches who have eaten their way into the fabric of this country and are destroying the absolute necessity of information sharing in order for us to make informed decisions. And when we come back, I'm going to quote some for you. Some of these are just outrageous. You'll recognize the names. Joe Scarborough, CeCe Connolly, Matthews. We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy.
Without passion, without compassion, without any emotion, as if we'd all been drugged.
We got news goop.
What we need to know.
News goop.
What we want to know.
We got news goop.
What we think we know.
No remote control to choose the show. But the ball we want, the less we know. Ignorance grows on the spirit like a...
This is the Mike Malloy Show on Air America Radio.
Are you losing your hair? Fight back with Avacor, now with Boost, which gives you visibly thicker hair with the first application.
I'm 20 years old and I've been losing my hair for 3 years. I started using Avacor and my hair stopped falling out. It's working.
Well, I'm 72 years old and I can tell you honestly, I have a fuller, healthier head of hair now than I did when I was 18 years old. Avacor really worked.
Whether you're 20, 72, or any age in between, Avacor works. An Avacor Boost will improve your hair's appearance the same day you receive your order. Call now and find out how you can get 3 months of Avacor free with your order. Call 1-800-301-1420. That's 1-800-301-1420. This is a limited time offer, so call right now. 1-800-301-1420. That's 1-800-301-1420.
Do you know the power of financial empowerment? Ambassador Andrew Young, humanitarian and educator, has teamed with Operation Hope founder John Bryant to help eradicate poverty through financial literacy education. Mr. Bryant, how is Operation Hope meeting this challenge?
To empower 5 million youth in 5 years in financial literacy.
Ambassador Young, what's your role in financial literacy education?
Well, I came up with Martin Luther King in the Civil Rights Movement, and now we're trying to develop a Silver Rights Movement. Young people in the system of free enterprise and capitalism need to understand money and how it works. It takes an army of volunteers, business leaders, educators, the entire community. We need the community's help.
If you need financial hope, we're here to help you. Call Operation Hope at 877-592-HOPE. That's 877-592-HOPE. Or visit us online at operationhope.org.
talk radio right. From the left, it's more of Mike Malloy.
26 before the hour. So fairness and accuracy in reporting, which is a liberal watchdog, a media watchdog group, it's been around for a long time. I don't know how long, 15 years maybe? Maybe not quite that, but they are so good at what they do. They put something together titled, The Final Word is Hooray, Remembering the Iraq War's Pollyanna Pundits. Now, I want you to listen to this, all right? What they've done is gather some of the most notable media comments from the early days of the Iraq War. Let's go back to April 10th, 03. Remember, the invasion was March 19th, 03. April 10th, Los Angeles Times headline, Iraq is all but won. Now what? May 4th, 03, CBS reporter Joey Chen. She now works for CNI, I believe. She says, now that the combat phase of the war in Iraq is officially over, what begins is a debate throughout the entire U.S. government over America's unrivaled power and how best to use it. NPR's Bob Edwards, April 28th, 03. Congress returns to Washington this week to a world very different from the one members left 2 weeks ago. The war in Iraq is essentially over, and domestic issues are regaining attention. Fox News Channel's Tony Snow, April 27th, 03. Tommy Franks and the coalition forces have demonstrated the old axiom that boldness on the battlefield produces swift and relatively bloodless victory. The three-week swing through Iraq has utterly shattered skeptics' complaints. Charles Krauthammer, the Washington Post columnist, from April 19th, 03. The only people who think this wasn't a victory are Upper West Side liberals and a few people here in Washington. Newsweek's and MSNBC's Howard Fineman, May 7th, 03. We had controversial wars that divided the country. This war united the country and brought the military back. MSNBC's Chris Matthews, April 9th, 03. We're all neocons now. Fox News Channel's Fred Barnes, April 10th, 03. The war was the hard part. The hard part was putting together a coalition, getting 300,000 troops over there and all their equipment and winning. And it gets easier. I mean, setting up a democracy is hard, but it's not as hard as winning a war. Are you with me on this, Truth Seekers? Do you hear these sick son of a bitches? And it gets worse. Washington Post reporter Cece Connolly, appearing on Fox News Channel on April 9th, 03, discussing the pulling down of Saddam Hussein's statue in Baghdad, an event later revealed to have been a U.S. military psyops stunt. This is from July 3rd, 04. Oh, it was breathtaking. I mean, I was almost starting to think that we had become inured to everything that we'd seen of this war of the past 3 weeks, all this sort of saturation. And finally, when we saw that it was such a just, true, genuine expression, it was reminiscent, I think, of the fall of the Berlin Wall. And just sort of that pure emotional expression, not choreographed, not stage managed, the way so many things these days seem to be, really breathtaking. Jesus Christ. That was on April 9th, 03. It was reported in LA Times to have been a stunt a year later. Okay, now this those were under the heading declaring victory. These are under the heading mission accomplished. This is PBS's Gwen Ifill, May 2nd. 03, on Bush's mission accomplished speech. The war winds down, politics heats up, picture perfect. Part Spider-Man, part Tom Cruise, part Ronald Reagan. The president seizes the moment on an aircraft carrier in the Pacific. Jesus Christ. MSNBC's Tweety, I'm sorry, Chris Matthews, May 1st, 03.
We're proud of our president. Americans love having a guy as president, a guy who has a little swagger, who's physical, who's not a complicated guy like Clinton, or even like Dukakis or Mondale, all those guys, McGovern. They want a guy as president. Women like a guy who's president. Check it out. The women like this war. I think we like having a hero as our president. It's simple. We're not like the Brits. Lou Dobbs, CNN's Lou Dobbs on Bush's mission accomplished speech. Same day, Lou Dobbs says, he looked like an alternatively commander-in-chief, rock star, movie star, and one of the guys. You ready to throw up your supper yet? No? Okay, I've got some more. This is called Neutralizing the Opposition. Chris Matthews again, April 9th, 03. Why don't the damn Democrats give the president his day? He won today. He did well today. Chris Matthews again talking about Howard Dean. Same program. What's he going to talk about a year from now? The fact that the war went too well and it's over? I mean, don't these things sort of lose their... Isn't there a fresh date on some of these debate points? It was 3 years ago. You dumb bastard. CNN's Judy Woodruff, May 5th, 03. If image is everything, how can the Democratic presidential hopefuls compete with a president fresh from a war victory? Washington Post reporter Jeff Birnbaum on Fox News Channel, May 2nd, 03. It is amazing how through the victory in Iraq really was... Now, let me do it again. This is on Fox News Channel, May 2nd, Washington Post reporter Jeff Birnbaum. It is amazing how thorough the victory in Iraq really was in the broadest context, and the silence, I think, is that it's clear that nobody can do anything about it. There isn't anybody who can stop him. The Democrats can't oppose him politically. This is called Nagging the Naysayers. Fox News Channel's Alan Combs, April 25th, 03. Now that the war in Iraq is all but over, should the people in Hollywood who opposed the president admit they were wrong? Joe Scarborough, April 9th, 03. I doubt that the journalists at the New York Times and NPR or at ABC or at CNN are ever going to admit just how wrong their negative pronouncements were over the past 4 weeks. On the same program, Scarborough says, I'm waiting to hear the words, I was wrong, from some of the world's elite journalists, politicians, and Hollywood types. I just wonder who's going to be the first elitist to show the character to say, hey, America, guess what? I was wrong. Maybe the White House will get an apology first from the New York Times, Marie Dowd. Now, Ms. Dowd mocked the morality of this war. Then he goes on to say, do y'all remember Scott Ritter? You know, the former chief UN weapons inspector who played chief stooge for Saddam Hussein? Well, Mr. Ritter actually told a French radio network that, quote, the United States is going to leave Baghdad with its tail between its legs, defeated, end quote. Sorry, Scott. I think you've been chasing the wrong tail again. And then he says, maybe disgraced commentators and politicians alike, like Daschle and Jimmy Carter and Dennis Kucinich and all those others, will step forward tonight and show the content of their character by simply admitting what we know already, that their wartime predictions were arrogant, they were misguided, and they were dead wrong. Maybe, just maybe, these self-anointed critics will learn from their mistakes, but I doubt it. After all, we don't call them elitists for nothing. Can you believe this crap? Do you think these people, Scarborough and Tweety Bird and Combs and the rest of, and CeCe Connolly and do you think they will step forward now? 3 years later and thousands of dead bodies, and say, Jesus Christ, we got it wrong? No, they won't. Fox News Channel's Dick Morris, April 9th, 03. Over the next couple of weeks, when we find the chemical weapons this guy was amassing, the fact that this war was attacked by the left, and so the right was vindicated, I think really means that the left is going to have to hang its head for 3 or more years. Really, Dick? New York Times reporter David Carr, April 16th, 03. This has been a tough war for commentators on the American left. To hope for defeat meant cheering for Saddam Hussein. To hope for victory meant cheering for President Bush. The toppling of Mr. Hussein, or at least a statue of him, has made their arguments even harder to defend. Liberal writers for ideological-driven magazines like The Nation, and for less overtly... political ones like The New Yorker, did not predict a defeat, but the terrible consequences many warned of have not happened. And now liberal commentators must address the victory at hand and confront an ascendant conservative juggernaut that asserts United States might can set the world right. Sieg Heil! Sieg Heil! Sieg Heil! There's some more, and I'll share them with you when we come back. I'm Mike Malloy.
The Mike Malloy Show on Air America Radio.
Some of the best minds in the automotive industry, using some of the most sophisticated design facilities. Engineers from Ford Motor Company are working together on a common mission, creating safer cars for our families and our children. Ford is renewing its commitment to driving American innovation. At the core of that effort is your safety, because every single life saved is worth it. Ford, driving American innovation.
Have you experienced a random act of kindness? Someone you haven't seen for years suddenly come back into your life? Do you know a positive story that inspired or motivated you? Aleve invites you to share your good news at AleveGoodNews.com. For years, Aleve has been devoted to providing good news for people with arthritis pain. Now, Aleve invites you to share your good news at AleveGoodNews.com.
Use it directed for minor arthritis pain.
si bon de partir n'importe où, bras dessus, bras dessous, en chantant des chansons.
Major combat operations in Iraq have ended. In the Battle of Iraq, the United States and our allies have prevailed.
Mais qui ont 10 ans long.
3 years ago, huh? Well, all these corpses and blown to pieces children and dead bodies and wounded Americans and depleted uranium and dead Americans and wounded Iraqis and insanity and craziness and civil war, that's just an illusion, right, you dumb bastard, right? Right, back to this, maybe I should work on satellite radio so I could use the kind of language on this thug that I'd like to. I get it's just, deep breath, Malloy.
But then we'd have to homeschool Molly because we wouldn't be able to send her out in public from the language that she would pick up.
That's very true. Right, back to the quotations by the war lovers, the whores, the America haters, the vermin that infests U.S. media. This is Fox News Channel's Morton Kondracki. April 12th, 03. Well, the hot story of the week is victory. The Tommy Franks, Don Rumsfeld battle plan, war plan, worked brilliantly. A three-week war with mercifully few American deaths or Iraqi civilian deaths. There's a lot of work yet to do, but all the naysayers have been humiliated so far. The final word on this is hooray. And these sons of bitches are still working. Every one of these people, except that pop-eyed freak Alan Combs, it was Alan Combs, wasn't it? Who am I thinking of? Alan Keyes. He's the pop-eyed freak. They're all still working. Washington Post, William Raspberry, even. He's referring to the Canadian Prime Minister. Shouldn't the Prime Minister and all of us who thought the war was hasty and dangerous and wrong-headed admit that we were wrong? I mean, with the pictures of those Iraqis dancing in the streets, hauling down statues of Saddam, and gushing their thanks to the Americans, isn't it clear that President Bush and Britain's Tony Blair were right all along? If we believe it's a good thing that Hussein's regime has been dismantled, aren't we hypocritical not to acknowledge Bush's superior judgment? Why can't those of us who thought the war was a bad idea let it go now and just join in celebrating the victory wrought by our magnificent military forces? Sieg Heil! Sieg Heil! Arbachmach frei! Einstadt! Ein Volk! Ein Führer! These people are insane, and Raspberry is a so-called liberal. These people are all still working. Lou Dobbs, April 14th, 03. Some journalists, in my judgment, just can't stand success, especially a few liberal columnists in newspapers and a few Arab reporters. Joe Scarborough again, May 30th, 03. Sean Penn is at it again. The Hollywood star takes out a full-page ad out in the New York Times bashing George Bush. Apparently, he still hasn't figured out we won the war. Christ. This comes under the heading Cakewalk. This is that drunken bastard Christopher Hitchens in a January 28, 03 debate cited in the Observer of the UK. March 30th, 03. Hitchens says this before we invaded. This will be no war. There will be a fairly brief and ruthless military intervention. The president will give an order. The attack will be rapid, accurate, and dazzling. It will be greeted by the majority of the Iraqi people as an emancipation. And I say, bring it on. Fox News Channel's resident psychopath, Bill O'Reilly, January 29th, 03, before the invasion. I will bet you the best dinner in the Gaslight District of San Diego that military action will not last more than a week. Are you willing to take that wager? You ought to be hanged, O'Reilly. You should be. You should be tried, convicted, and hanged just for being a jackass. Here's O'Reilly again.
10 days later. It won't take weeks. You know that, Professor. Our military machine will crush Iraq in a matter of days, and there's no question that it will. Here he is again, same day. There's no way. There's absolutely no way. They may bomb for a matter of weeks, try to soften them up as they did in Afghanistan, but once the United States and Britain unleash, it's maybe hours. They're going to fold like that. NBC reporter Fred Francis on the Chris Matthews Show, April 13th, 03. Saddam Hussein actually thought that he could stop us and win the debate worldwide, but he didn't. He didn't bargain on a 2 or 3 week war. I actually thought it would be less than 2 weeks. Do you hear this? You know, when we got together at Whitewater University of Wisconsin last night, one of the questions after my little speech, one of the questions from a member of the audience was about the failure of media in this country. Jesus, God. I mean, do you understand how serious it is? Of course you do. We have 4 or 5 more when we come back. The next 4 or 5 are on the weapons of mass destruction. And even NPR's Mara Liasson gets in on the act. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Air America.
Mike Malloy on Air America Radio. This is the Nation Minute on Air America Radio.
Political corruption, the world's second oldest profession, just isn't as easy as it used to be. Take defense contractor Mitchell Wade. He had a good thing going with Representative Randy Duke Cunningham until the congressman's taste for bling got them both busted. Mr. Wade now claims he funneled $50,000 in illegal campaign contributions to Catherine Harris. But the congressman failed to secure the payoff. After what she pulled off for George W., Mr. Wade must wonder if Catherine was holding out on him. Or take John Goodman, president of a Dallas-based think tank. He thought he had bought himself another reliable intellectual to shill for George W. But what he ended up with in Bruce Bartlett, author of Imposter, How George Bush Bankrupted America and Betrayed the Reagan Legacy, was a pundit with a guilty conscience and a leaky mouth. With Iraq on the brink of civil war and the president's poll numbers in the tank, it will be interesting to see who will join Andrew Sullivan, William Buckley, Francis Fukuyama, and now Bruce Bartlett is the next convert to the anti-Bush camp. I'm Katrina Vandenhoevel from The Nation for Air America. For more, go to thenation.com.
More coffee, mister?
Yes, please. Oh, boy.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Hot coffee all over you. Let me get some paper towels and some cold water. Are you all right?
Why, I'm just fine, young lady. It's just scalding coffee.
Mister, you must be gelling.
That's why I'm not yelling, even though there's considerable redness and swelling.
More gel, more gelling. New and improved Dr. Scholl's massaging gel insoles. More cushioning. Totally outrageous comfort. To start gelling like never before, see the doctor, Dr. Scholl's.
Waitress, how about some more coffee?
Hi, I'm David Orrick. 40 million Americans suffer from allergies, 17 million from asthma, 37 million from sinus infections. Here's the thought. Change the air you breathe. An Orrick Professional Air Purifier completely renews the air in an average-sized room every 10 minutes. Try it free for 90 days. Call 1-800-989-4200. That's 1-800-989-4200.
Radio News, I'm Bill Crowley. Destruction of a nerve agent powerful enough for a single drop to kill a person within minutes has now been halted at a plant in Indiana. About 300 gallons of wastewater created by destroying the nerve agent VX spilled at the Newport Chemical Depot. This is the fourth spill there since destruction of the Cold War-era stockpile of nerve gas began in May. A spokesperson says investigators are trying to figure out what caused the waste to leak from a chemical reactor during routine maintenance. The wastewater does not contain any active VX. The White House rejecting a Republican senator's call for a staff shakeup. Spokesman Scott McClellan says George Bush has a smart and experienced team that's fully capable. But Minnesota Senator Norm Coleman said the Bush administration has developed what he called a tin ear in dealings with Congress. And he says Bush needs to look at the team now serving him. Coleman cited the White House handling of Hurricane Katrina, the failed Harriet Myers Supreme Court nomination, and the plans for an Arab company to manage terminals at six U.S. ports. Many top staffers have served Bush since he took office in 2001. Asked if some are now tired, McClellan told reporters he's tired of some of the questions, which he called, quote, Washington pontificating and second-guessing. That said, McClellan did not categorically rule out staff changes in the West Wing. The General Assembly voted overwhelmingly today to replace the UN's discredited human rights body with a new Human Rights Council that ignored objections from the U.S. ambassador that not enough was done to prevent abusive countries from becoming members. Ambassadors from most of the 191 U.N. member states burst into sustained applause when the results of the vote were announced, 170 in favor, 4 against, and 3 abstentions. U.S. Ambassador John Bolton refused to join in the applause. Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas toured today the devastated Jericho prison where Israel took away 6 prisoners. He denounced the raid as an unforgivable crime. Acting Prime Minister Ehud Olmert said the 6 Palestinians, including Ahmed Sadat, leader of the Radical Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine, will face trial. He said they'll be indicted according to Israeli law and punished as they deserve. Meanwhile, the U.S. Mideast envoy says chaos will reign in the streets unless millions of poor Palestinians get Western aid money. James Wolfensohn told a Senate committee it would take months to find a way to get help to the Palestinians and bypass the Hamas-led government. This is Air America Radio News.
Well, welcome back. Excuse me. Got a frog in my throat, I guess. Too much travel on too many pressurized airplanes. It's about 7 past the hour. What I'm quoting from is, you can find it at Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting's website. It's FAIR, FAIR.org. And it'll be on the right side of the main page when you go to FAIR.org. Click on it. The title is, The Final Word is Hooray. And it's about the right-wing filth in this country, all over media, politics, who sucked up to George Bush after his shock and awe, the attack on a country that posed zero threat to us. In retrospect, I've never heard anything like this. You talk about jingoism to a degree that I'm just not familiar with. I really am not. For the might of the United States military to lash essentially a country that cannot defend itself and just blow it into a million pieces, murdering everybody that gets in our way. And then for these filth, to dance on the corpses, Scarborough and O'Reilly and Matthews and C.C. Connolly and Writers for the Times, and the list goes on and on. You're listening. You hear this. Now, there's just a couple more. Weapons of mass destruction. This is from Fox News Channel with Britt Hume, April 6, 2003. NPR's Mara Liasson said, where there was a debate about whether or not Iraq had these weapons of mass destruction and whether we can find them, and then Hume interrupts and says, no, there was no debate. Nobody seriously argued that he didn't have them beforehand. Nobody. God. Cal Thomas, a right-wing religious freak columnist, February 12, 03, before the invasion. Speaking to the UN Security Council last week, Secretary of State Colin Powell made so strong a case that Iraqi dictator Saddam Hussein is in material breach of UN resolutions that only the duped, the dumb, and the desperate could ignore it. Well, how do you feel now, Cal? You little Christ killer? You little murderer of true Christianity, you fake right-wing thug. Only the duped, the dumb, and the desperate? This is from Newsweek, March 17th, 03 issue. Saddam could decide to take Baghdad with him. One Arab intelligence officer interviewed by Newsweek spoke of the green mushroom over Baghdad, the modern-day caliph bidding a grotesque biochem farewell to the land of the living alongside thousands of his subjects as well as his enemies. Saddam wants to be remembered. He has the means and the demonic imagination. It is up to U.S. armed forces to stop him before he can achieve notoriety for all time. 2 days before the invasion, so there was going to be a green mushroom over Baghdad. Oh, that's right. Saddam was going to nuke Baghdad. That was Newsweek. MSNBC reporter Bob Arno, April 9th, 03, talking to Chris Matthews. Chris, more than anything else, real vindication for the administration. One, credible evidence of weapons of mass destruction. Two, you know what? There were a lot of terrorists here. Really bad guys. I saw them. And finally, New York Times neo-Nazi William Sapphire, who should know better since he's Jewish, but it doesn't matter to these neocons. They will out-Nazi Hitler. William Sapphire, April 10th, 03. Even in the flush of triumph, doubts will be raised. Where are the supplies of germs and poison gas and plans for nukes to justify preemption?
Freed scientists will lead us to caches no inspectors could find. What about remaining danger from Ba'athist torturers and war criminals forming pockets of resistance and plotting vengeance? Their death wish is our command. So there you have it. I mean, it's just, it's disgusting beyond belief. It's one thing for a journalist, a reporter, a television newsreader, a writer, to write something to the effect of, I hope we kick Saddam's ass. I'm fairly convinced we're going to find weapons of mass destruction. If Bush pulls this off, maybe we should reconsider our contempt and disgust every time his face shows up on the telescreen. But no, that's not what they did. That's not what they did at all. You just heard what they did. And that's just a smidgen. It went on for weeks, and then all of a sudden it stopped. Didn't it? And all of these claims by these right-wing thugs, oh, well, when are the liberals going to step out of the shadows and apologize, huh? You filthy pigs, every one of you. Damn you for destroying my country. Damn you for doing what you do on media. Damn you for infesting the brains of these knuckle-draggers and these folks out here who just, oh, go George. It's like a basket. Oh, it's like the Final Four. Oh, we're going to go George, beat Saddam. Go George. Yeah, let's go, man. Hey, where's the Marines? Hey, blah, 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 blah. From today's Associated Press, Iraq edges closer to open civil warfare. Iraqi authorities discovered at least 87 corpses, men shot to death execution style, as Iraq edged closer to open civil warfare. 29 of the bodies, dressed only in underwear, were dug out of a single grave Tuesday in a Shiite neighborhood of Baghdad. Meanwhile, some of the bloodshed appeared to be in retaliation for a bomb and mortar attack on the Sadr City slum that killed at least 58 people and wounded more than 200 2 days earlier. Iraq's Interior Minister Bayan Jaber, meanwhile, told the Associated Press security officials had foiled a plot that would have put hundreds of al-Qaeda men at critical guard posts around Baghdad's heavily fortified Green Zone, home to the U.S. and other foreign embassies, as well as the Iraqi government. A senior defense ministry official said the 421 al-Qaeda fighters were recruited to storm the U.S. and British embassies and take hostages. Several ranking defense ministry officials have been jailed in the plot, said the official, speaking on condition of anonymity because of the sensitivity of this information. Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld said he had not received anything definitive on this report, but cautioned that earlier accounts are often adjusted later on. Rumsfeld said, we've always known that there are people who have tried to infiltrate the various security forces and tried to get close access to places they ought not to be. There's nothing new about that I know of. Astonishing, unbelievable, incredible, mind-boggling. Rumsfeld and Cheney and Bush and these sick, destructive generals who are corrupting the United States military to a point that's going to take hundreds of years to restore their honor and dignity, and Colin Powell and Condoleezza Rice and Armitage and Bolton and Abrams. These people need to be hauled before an international tribunal. They need to be put on trial. They need to be given a fair trial, which they do not grant anyone else. They need to be convicted, and they need to be punished. Some of them very, very severely. How do you punish a mass murderer?
Seen the little piggies crawling in the dirt, and for all the little piggies life is getting worse, always having dirt to play around in.
In my line of work, you got to keep repeating things over and over and over again for the truth to sink in. to kind of catapult the propaganda.
Stirring up the dirt. Always have clean shirts to play around with.
You're listening to The Mike Malloy Show on Air America Radio.
The following is a message from Brutus at the National Disaster Search Dog Foundation.
Last October, three buildings collapsed. I was called in to help. Two little kids were missing. I looked everywhere. Then I found them. They were crying. We all were.
Be part of the search. Call 1-888-4K9-HERO or visit searchdogfoundation.org. Made possible by Search Dog USA.
Now out on DVD, Good Night and Good Luck. Nominated for 6 Academy Awards, including Best Picture, Best Actor, and Best Director George Clooney. A critically acclaimed award-winning film about the historic showdown between journalist Edward R. Murrow and Senator Joseph McCarthy. Peter Travers of Rolling Stone calls it an electrifying movie event, and David Anson of Newsweek hails it as one of the best movies of the year. Don't miss this brilliant, thought-provoking film, Good Night and Good Luck, on DVD now.
Lullaby.
It's Mike Malone.
Do you think she's good enough?
Past the hour, Peter Pace and the chairman of the Joint Chiefs and Rumsfeld had a joint press conference today. Peter Pace was asked at the news conference if he has proof that Iran's government is doing what his boss, Donald Rumsfeld, claimed last week. Bush last Monday suggested Iran was involved in making roadside bombs, known as IEDs. And Rumsfeld accused Iran of sending members of its Revolutionary Guard to conduct operations in Iraq. So there stands Peter Pace. Look for him to have a serious accident or retire early because he wants to spend more time with his family. Because Pace stood there with Rumsfeld today, and he was asked if he has any proof that Iran's government is sponsoring these activities. Pace said, "I do not, sir." Well, gee, Peter, your boss who's standing to your immediate left, you know, the guy that keeps thumping the podium, you're in direct refutation of what he said. You're in direct contradiction of what your boss said. Watch your back, Peter. From that press conference today, or was it yesterday? I guess it was yesterday. Here's Rumsfeld. This has to be one of my all-time favorite, if that's the right word, Rumsfeld quotes. He's still not ready to admit that Iraq is in the midst of an all-out civil war, but he's ready to say that if that country perchance finds itself in a civil war, he can say it's not going to be like the American Civil War. That's right. The reporter says, "Mr. Secretary, you've characterized the violence in Iraq as sectarian. 87 more dead since Monday. And you have said you don't believe Iraq is in a civil war. What is the difference in your mind between sectarian violence and civil war?"
You know, it's a good question, and we've been trying to look for a way to characterize what are the ingredients of the civil war, and how would you know if there was one, and what would it look like, and what might be its progression. Either up to increased violence or down to less violence. And it's a hard thing to do, and people are analyzing that and thinking about it. And I think until I've had a chance to think more about it, I will say I don't think it'll look like the United States' civil war.
Oh, really? Well, you know, you're right, Donnie. Considering there were no IEDs or mini nukes or carpet bombs or depleted uranium ammo or Humvees or airplanes or electricity during the American Civil War, so I guess it's safe to say the Iraqi Civil War won't be like the American Civil War. No hoop skirts, no Negroes hauling up great big bales of cotton. Scarlet isn't running around Baghdad digging up rotten carrots and milking cows and calling for Rhett either. I'll never be Paul again. I never will. Rhett Butler. You get your well-foamed ass up here right now, Rhett. You see what these Yankees are doing to Atlanta? Look, Rhett. Lord have me. I don't know nothing about birthing no babies, Miss Scarlett. Is he this out of touch? This psychopathic son of a bitch who belongs in a mental institution or a prison? Doesn't he? Disagree with me. Go ahead. You right-wingers, disagree with me. Rumsfeld is either insane or a master criminal. He belongs either in an institution for the criminally insane or a prison. Rhett!
Rat, please come up here. Bring your well-formed butt up here. Help me dig up these turnip thingies out the ground. My slaves all fled.
It's not going to look like the American Civil War. Is that what he said? Oh, my God. All right, we'll have one more from Rumsfeld, and then we'll all go out after this break. Have this last Rumsfeld quote, and then we'll all go throw up, and then we'll come back for the rest of the program tonight. All right, stick around. I'm Mike Malloy.
Red! Red! Please come help me. My hoop skirt is all caught in this damn wagon you brought me here. Where's Prissy? I need Prissy. Prissy! Prissy, bring yourself here!
Oh, no, Miss Scarlet. My ass is out of here.
This is the Mike Malloy Show on Air America Radio.
A good news story from AliveGoodNews.com.
I'm passionate about two things, motorcycles and my grandchildren. But for the past 3 years, I've suffered from arthritis. The pain caused me to lose strength in my arms, and I couldn't pick up my grandchildren. My doctor suggested I try Aleve, and I definitely noticed the difference. With the pain gone, I've got the energy to pick up my grandchildren and have fun. It's fantastic.
Aleve invites you to share your good news at AliveGoodNews.com.
Use it directed for minor arthritis pain.
Now out on DVD. Good night and good luck. Nominated for 6 Academy Awards, including Best Picture, Best Actor, and Best Director George Clooney. A critically acclaimed award-winning film about the historic showdown between journalist Edward R. Murrow and Senator Joseph McCarthy. Peter Travers of Rolling Stone calls it an electrifying movie event, and David Anson of Newsweek hails it as one of the best movies of the year. Don't miss this brilliant, thought-provoking film, Good Night and Good Luck, on DVD now.
More coffee, mister?
Yes, please. Oh, boy.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Hot coffee all over you. Let me get some paper towels and some cold water. Are you all right?
Why, I'm just fine, young lady. It's just scalding coffee.
Mister, you must be gelling.
That's why I'm not yelling, even though there's considerable redness and swelling.
More gel, more gelling. New and improved Dr. Scholl's massaging gel insoles. More cushioning, totally outrageous comfort. To start gelling like never before, see the doctor, Dr. Scholl's.
Waitress, how about some more coffee?
At Borders, we believe readers should never be stuck without something good to read.
What are you reading?
Soda Can.
Like it?
I've read it before.
Yeah, me too. I found it rather predictable. Carbonated water, aspartame.
I like the part about the final ketonuric, though. Mm. Sounds so ominous.
You'll always have something great to read with Borders Rewards. Joining is free. Earn rewards every time you shop. See store for details.
What do you think the author meant by canned under the authority of?
Oh, that part did seem to come out of nowhere.
That's what I thought.
Join Borders Rewards. Make reading even more rewarding.
helping of truth? It's more of Mike Malloy.
It's about 25 before the hour. Last one from Rumsfeld at the briefing yesterday, Department of Defense briefing, with the equally delusional Peter Pace, who apparently has had one too many deployments. Now, this is the kind of answer from Rumsfeld that makes me kind of nostalgic for the days when this psychopathic old bastard was waxing poetic about our plans for a counterattack should the moon suddenly decide to launch missiles at American targets. Yeah, he said that. Now, all of a sudden, those comments seem sane. By the way, when you hear him answer here, the rhythmic podium pounding is getting worse. He's losing it again. The reporter says, Mr. Secretary, you mentioned the 80, 87 people who were killed since Monday in what appears to be sectarian violence. Do you see the violence in Iraq changing in nature from insurgency to this sectarian violence?
I don't even know the number's 87. I know the report says 87, but I don't know that that's true either, nor do I suspect you. No, how do you disaggregate that and say so many were in this category and so many were in that category? You can't know that. I don't know that, and I know I don't know that. And people who think they know probably don't.
Repeat after me, you nutcase.
There are no knowns. There are unknown unknowns. Okay, well, Rumsfeld, how about this? This is from the Reuters news agency. Put this in your evil, sick mind. To Crete. 11 members of an Iraqi family were killed in a U.S. raid on Wednesday, police and witnesses said. The U.S. military said two women and a child died during the bid. To seize an al-Qaeda militant from a house. However, television pictures showed 11 bodies in the Tikrit morgue, 5 children, 2 men, and 4 women. A freelance photographer later saw the bodies being buried in Ish-Aki, the town 100 kilometers north of Baghdad, where the raid took place. The U.S. military said in a statement its troops had attacked a house in Ish-Aki earlier on Wednesday to capture a, quote, foreign fighter facilitator for the al-Qaeda in Iraq network, end quote. U.S. spokesman Major Tim Keefe said, quote, troops were engaged by enemy fire as they approached the building. Coalition forces returned fire utilizing both air and ground assets. There was one enemy killed. 2 women and 1 child also were killed in the firefight. The building was destroyed. Major Ali Ahmed of the Ish-Aki police said U.S. forces had landed on the roof of the house in the early hours and shot the 11 occupants, including the 5 children. The policeman said, quote, after they left the house, they blew it up. Another policeman, Major Farouk Hussein, said all the bodies had gunshot wounds to the head. Pictures of the house targeted in the raid showed it had been reduced to rubble, while next to it lay the burnout wreckage of a truck. Iraqi police said the U.S. military had asked for a meeting with local tribal leaders. Photographs at the funeral showed men weeping as 5 children were wrapped in blankets and then lined up in a row next to freshly dug graves. Police in Salahuddin province, a heartland of the Sunni Arab insurgency and the home reign of region of Saddam Hussein, have frequently criticized U.S. military tactics in the area. In January, a U.S. airstrike on a house in Baiji, further north, killed several members of the same family. In December, U.S. fighter jets dropped 2 500-pound bombs on... what's the point? Do you have kids? Do you have grandkids? Do you have kids around 2, 3, 6, 8, 9? Picture them dead.
Go ahead. I do this all the time. I can't. I probably need to go back seeing a psychologist because I can't seem to get control of some of these images that rip and tear through my head. Because we are killing more children. We are bombing little children. Maybe it's because I have a little child and grandchildren. Do you? Do you have children? Do you have little children? Do you have a three-year-old? Are you listening to this program now while your little girl, your little boy is upstairs asleep? Are you listening to this program right now thinking about, well, this weekend you're going to see your grandkids? Now, this is rough, but this is what we're about now. Picture your little kids and your grandkids dead. Picture them laid out next to freshly dug graves. Picture, go ahead. Picture those little lifeless bodies. Their eyes get all dark around their eye sockets and their skin gets real pale. And their little hands are clenched into some kind of a shape, like a claw or a fist, and they're laying there. And now picture you and your spouse. And if these are your grandkids, picture your children, who are these kids' parents. All of you are standing there weeping, aren't you? Here comes the priest. The priest is going to try to do something for you because you're Catholic. No, you're not Catholic? Okay, here comes the minister. He's going to try to explain to you how, you know, this is not punishment. You know, it's just things like this happen. But God still loves you. Okay, now picture. Hold the image. Go ahead. Come on, you can do it. Come on. You're as strong as I am. Come on. Hold the image. See all those dead children? Your dead children? See that? But Donald Rumsfeld says, I don't even know the number's 87. I know the report says 87, but I don't know that's true either. Nor do I suspect do you. How do you disaggregate? How do you disaggregate 87 and say so many were in this category, like children, and so many in that category, like old ladies? How do you do that? You can't know that. I don't know that. And I don't know that, and people who think they know probably don't. Donald Rumsfeld is a murderous, killing demon. He is out of the deepest, darkest reaches of hell. And this miserable man is wandering the Middle East, killing people, murdering people by the scores, the hundreds, the thousands. And when this is all over, Bush is going to give him a Medal of Freedom. And these right-wing think tanks are going to invite him over to give speeches. And he's going to wind up on the board of, the Carlyle Group. And he's going to make millions more on Tamiflu. Who makes that? Share or Plow? Who makes it? I don't care. Don't email me. This is what these filthy, filthy, filthy people do. 5 children, 2 men and 4 women, murdered because the commanders in Iraq said, there's an Al-Qaeda militant in our house, and we want him. Go get him. But what about the kid? Kill him! Kill them! Get the militant. But kill him, soldier. Jesus Christ. How much more of this can you take? St. Pete Times today is talking about a pharmacist, an Iraqi pharmacist named Intisar Mohammed Ariabi. She has come to the United States with a group of Iraqi women to tell what it's like to live through 3 years of war. She went to Jordan and got a 1-month visa to come to the United States. She spoke in St. Pete, Florida last night. Scheduled to speak at 7 o'clock tonight, which is now past, the University of South Florida. According to Times, she will talk about how a city of air conditioning, email, and fashionable restaurants disintegrated into explosions, gunfire, and kidnapping. How the routine of day-to-day life in Baghdad became death and chaos, making people afraid to venture outside. And how she, her friends, and the U.S. soldiers she knows have become increasingly depressed and bitter over the past 3 years. She told the St. Pete Times through a translator that the once modern Baghdad hospital where she works, she's a pharmacist, has electricity and running water only for an hour a day now. So only a small number of wounded or ill civilians can be treated. She said, quote, those with at least a 70% chance of survival get attention. The rest we have to let die. Arms and legs are buried in the hospital courtyard because there's nothing else to do with them, she says. Diseases like cholera, typhoid, and polio, not seen in Iraq in decades, have returned. Cancer patients go without treatment or painkillers. Burn wounds quickly turn into deadly infections because of a shortage of staff to keep them clean. Doctors and nurses are often attacked by desperate family members who can't bear to see loved ones suffer. She said, in Baghdad, we live in a state of terror. She said, many Iraqis hoped for a better life when the United States invaded 3 years ago. She said they have to bury body parts because they don't have any way to bury them intact.
The Mike Malloy Show on Air America Radio.
Hank Montenegro of Morganville, New Jersey wrote, Dear Mr. Oreck, ever since we purchased your 8-pound Oreck XL vacuum, my wife has been in heaven. Recently, she panicked, believing she'd broken the vacuum. I contacted your customer service department, and after a few questions, I was sent a replacement part at no charge. The machine is as good as new. Try my 8-pound Oreck XL risk-free for 30 days. Call 1-800-989-4200. 1-800-989-4200.
You know, it's amazing how many things you can do online these days. Plastic surgery online is still a few years off, but I bet they're working on it. And what about doing all your car insurance business online? Well, it's already here. At GEICO.com, you can do most everything. Change drivers, change cars, change coverage, change your oil. I made that last one up. GEICO.com. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
obviously killing Americans, but they're killing a lot more Iraqis.
Here comes the revolution.
It's about 10 before the hour. All right, this is the last thing on what we were just talking about. When we come back, we're going to take your phone calls and do our reading for 1984. This is from Palcat. Palcat writes, "Hi, Mike, glad you're back. Have you noticed how much Palcat is referring to those quotes? How much their conservative oral goose-stepping sounds like some cheap plastic mass-produced Chinese import? There's nothing original or unique about these people. They seem to me like a cadre of wild apes, all screeching and swinging from tree limbs, hurling their poop at anything that moves, then giggling and rolling in the stench. They really are disgusting. It becomes so easy to identify their agenda, their nonsense. True to form, all we have to do is listen to what they're saying, and we know the opposite is true. When they screech out bravado and arrogance, we know they are ashamed of themselves. When they gang up to smooch up on George Bush, we know they see what a bumbling, embarrassing moron he is. When they fling their excrement at liberals and Democrats, they're confessing their deep-rooted fear, their clear understanding that the liberals tell the truth and that they are right. These so-called journalists you're quoting this evening aren't even journalists. Even that is an opposite. They're part of the gang of thieves and idiots, abusing their ability to influence an entire nation by crooning lies and fables, making things up outright and knowing that it isn't going to work. They do it for money because they're greedy and they have no self-respect, but they also do it because they have no clue how to think for themselves. They are cowards who need to tap into a party line to feel like they exist. That is why they hate liberals and Democrats. Liberals and Democrats are not impressed. They are self-thinkers. And they are tolerant of the differences that exist between us all. They are rooted in reality, fairness, honesty, equality, and honor. They support life and see the thing we all have in common. They believe in working toward a common good and sharing the benefits, improving the quality of life for everyone. All of that is far too open-ended and open-minded for the monkey people. They are all cardboard cutouts of each other. They outdo each other in sameness. Now history will have a stunning record of their stupidity and hatefulness, their vile attitude, their lies, and their greed. We liberals knew we were right all along. Now they know it too. It's such a dirty shame that these right-wingers are so hell-bent on destroying everything they can get their hands on. What a wonderful world it would be if they put all that oily energy to good use instead of spraying their seething fear and hatred at anyone who can use the brain and eyes and ears they were born with to think for themselves. These people literally hate truth and beauty and life. May their God forgive them. I never will. Okay. Didn't mean to bum you out with the images of your children or grandchildren wrapped in rags getting ready to be buried in an open grave as a result of being murdered by foreign troops. But you see, it maybe if we all thought about that on a regular basis, we would force this filthy leadership in the United States of America to cease and desist. These are children. For Christ's sake, these are children. They're collateral damage. Scott in Sacramento, California, sent me an email here. Mike, there's an event this weekend in Sacramento. The info is right on the front page of this site. If you have time to throw it out there, wonderful. Thanks. Sacramento4Democracy.org. Four is spelled out, F-O-R. Sacramento4Democracy.org. I went to the website during one of the breaks, and yeah, they're planning this, you know, a lot of commemoration of the murderous place this Bush crime family has dragged this country. Torture, murder, death. But that image of those little kids, and you see it all the time. Don't go to any more of those Iraq war picture sites. You're going to lose your mind. You really are. I could feel that happening with me. Looking at some of those photographs of children blown to pieces and the parents who survived. This is what we're doing. There's no justification for this.
Not one. Not a single goddamn justification for one of these children being blown to pieces. Not one. Not a single justification. Nothing. There's no way to balance that. I don't care if you believe in God or a full-blown atheist. I don't care what your point of view is. We are murdering children! And we're doing it with the mightiest military ever assembled in the history of the human race. And we're doing it because George Bush is a psychopath and ordered the troops to go in and kill people, kill children, kill old people, kill young people, kill men, kill women, kill them all. Iraq doesn't have an army. Iraq doesn't have an air force. Iraq doesn't have a Marine Corps. Iraq doesn't have a navy. Iraq has people that want us the hell out of their country. But we're going to stay there as long as we have these murderous Nazis like Rumsfeld and Cheney and an empty-headed dolt like George Bush and all the people that surround this triumvirate of evil. We're going to continue to be there and to kill people. Kill people who are doing nothing except trying to breathe. Just trying to breathe. That's all. We're going to keep killing them and the kids. We are going to keep killing children. Do you understand that? We're going to keep killing children. Tomorrow, next day, next week, next month, we're going to keep killing children.
Mike Malloy on Air America Radio.
Jen, what's up?
Hey, how'd you know I was having a party?
Everyone knows you're having a party.
Yeah, pretty crazy, isn't it?
Totally.
Hey, I'm going to smoke up. Want to get high? Here, you'll like this.
This is the moment your guidance can prevent your teen from smoking marijuana. So visit theantidrug.com and learn how to set clear rules about drugs. Parents, The Anti-Drug. Sponsored by the ONDCP and the Partnership for a Drug-Free America.
Who was the first automaker to introduce factory-installed safety belts and roll stability control? First to introduce emergency trunk releases and offer head and chest side airbags? And who is working on future safety innovations like lane departure warning and blind spot alert systems? It's Ford Motor Company. Ford engineers are working to help protect children, keep families safer, and save lives. Ford, driving American innovation.
America Radio News, I'm Jeff Weiser. Asking that God have mercy on his soul, a Florida judge sentenced Joseph Smith to death Wednesday for the 2004 kidnapping, rape, and murder of an 11-year-old girl. Smith was condemned to death for the sex slaying of Carly Brucia, whom he kidnapped behind a car wash. That abduction was captured on a surveillance tape. 27 people from the U.S. and three other nations are charged in an international child pornography ring. Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez says the defendants used the Internet to trade pictures and videos of sexual abuse of children. Four of the defendants are accused of actually molesting children and making the images available in a chat room. The defendants are from nine U.S. states, as well as Canada, Australia, and Great Britain. President Bush paid homage Wednesday to the freedom fighters who staged a revolt against communist rule 50 years ago. The president appeared at a Capitol Hill event marking the anniversary of the Hungarian Revolution. Bush said Hungarians have made a significant contribution to freedom and liberty.
One of the leading lights of democracy has been Hungary. We thank the Hungarian people for their example. We thank them for their contribution in helping the newly free in Afghanistan and Iraq realize the blessings of liberty.
Bush said free nations have a responsibility to help other nations achieve liberty and democracy. Although the Hungarian Revolution of 1956 failed, most of its political prisoners were released by 1963. The communist regime fell in 1989, and the nation became independent. A gunman opened fire at a Denny's restaurant in Pismo Beach, California, Wednesday, killing two people and wounding two others. The shooter then killed himself. Police say the man walked into the restaurant with two guns and started shooting. It's not clear if he was targeting anyone or if he fired at random. Heavy rain continues over Kauai in Hawaii, posing a danger of additional flooding. On Tuesday, a dam broke, sweeping away houses and cutting a main highway in two. Seven people are missing and one body has been recovered. History went on sale at Christie's Auction House in Manhattan Wednesday. Contents from the famed Plaza Hotel were up for grabs to the highest bidder. The Landmark Hotel is undergoing a $350 million renovation into a smaller inn and luxury condos. You're listening to Air America Radio News. I'm Jeff Weiser.
Welcome back. It's about 6:30 past the hour. We want to take some phone calls now. The last thing I want to throw into the mix here, another Bush aide has been busted. I'm sure you know about this. This happened a couple of days ago, over the weekend, I think. Claude Allen, who had resigned in February, citing a need to spend more time with his family. He was arrested last week in suburban Maryland on charges that he stole merchandise from Target and other stores. He had this little scheme that went on for months. But he was a petty thief. Not that I'm justifying thievery, but the most he got was about $5,000 in stuff that ranged from a Bose home theater system to $2.50 trinkets, according to the LA Times. He was a conservative star and a born-again Christian, father of four, who rose from a working-class childhood in the nation's capital to become one of the administration's most senior members. He's the third member of this corrupt administration to face criminal charges. There's Irving Libby. There's David Safavian. And now this guy. He was arrested Thursday in an affluent Maryland suburb north of Washington and released on his own recognizance. His police mugshot shows him tieless, his collar askew, and his eyes averted from the camera. He faces two charges in connection with the alleged thefts, an ongoing scheme, each of which carries maximum penalties of a $25,000 fine and 15 years in prison. According to the Montgomery County Police, a Target store manager spotted Allen strolling the aisles January 2nd with an empty Target bag in his shopping cart. The manager watched as Allen placed items in the bag, then went to guest services and presented a receipt to receive a refund for those items. After receiving the refund, Allen left the store without paying for other merchandise and was stopped by an employee. A subsequent investigation showed that Allen had fraudulently returned more than $5,000 worth of goods at Target and department stores over the last year. Police said the way it worked, Allen would buy items, take them out to the car, and then return to the store with a receipt. He would then select the same items he had just purchased and then go to the guest services counter for a refund. He'd get the money, and, of course, the items he paid for were still out in the car. What about this guy? Oh, Bush was going to appoint him to the Federal Appeals Court bench. Yeah. He graduated from UNC Chapel Hill. He got his political start as one of the first African-American aides to then-Senator Jesse Helms. You see, now you figured it out right away. As soon as I say Jesse Helms and an aide, an African-American aide to Jesse Helms, you know what has happened here, don't you? Sure you do. After Duke Law School, a clerkship at the U.S. Court of Appeals led to a close friendship with then-Judge Clarence Thomas, now Supreme Court Justice. Allen went on to serve as the Health and Human Services Secretary for Virginia, where he cemented his conservative bona fides by denying a low-income rape victim Medicaid funds for an abortion. No, you little bitch, you're not going to get it. You were raped. You must have asked for it. Were you wearing a tight skirt, sweetie? In 2001, Bush appointed Allen to the number two post at the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, where he promoted abstinence-only AIDS prevention programs. In 2003, Bush tapped him for a seat on the Federal Appeals Court, but Democrats blocked the nomination, in part because of comments Allen made while working for Jesse Helms. Discussing Helms' political opponent in one of Helms' races, Allen said the man that Jesse was running against was vulnerable because that man had ties to queers. Queers. At his confirmation hearing, though, Allen told senators that he didn't mean homosexuals. He meant people who were odd, out of the ordinary. You little rat bastard. Jail waits. Jail waits, Claude Allen. So you denied this poor, low-income child an abortion after she was raped. Wait till you get raped, Claude. When you go to prison. Wait till that happens. Are you going to want an abortion, Claude? Filthy. Filthy. He sold his soul.
Here's a black man who went to work for Jesse Helms, a vicious, hate-filled, absolute, slave-owning racist. If slavery was still legal, Jesse would have 1,000 of them out there. Boy, get your ass over here! Pick this cotton, boy! Pick that tobacco!
But Jesse can't do that legally. So he presents himself as a great southern gentleman and hires Negroes and eats their souls. He eats their souls. While poor Charles Allen was sleeping one night, Jesse Helms came into the room and extracted his soul and took it up to the big house, put it in the microwave, put it on high for 2 minutes, took it out, put a little hot sauce on it, and ate it.
When Charles Allen woke up the next morning, damn, something's missing here.
What was missing, Mr. Allen, was your soul. Jesse Helms took it and cooked it and ate it. You sell out to white people? You sell out to white people like Jesse Helms and George Bush, you wind up stealing stuff from Target. You're going to be an appeals court judge? Not after your soul's been eaten.
Nothing but happy, happy, joy, joy, bluebirds and rainbows on the Malloy Show tonight, I see.
I don't know what the hell am I supposed to do? Okay, I can talk about fun stuff. You want me to talk about fun stuff? Let's talk about Feingold being left out to hung out to dry by the rest of the great forward-thinking liberal Democrats because Feingold decided to introduce a censure measure, and all the Democrats ran screaming with their little asses just floating in the breeze away from him.
Well, that would be a little bit better than dead children stretched out next to their graves and soul-eating Jesse Helms images floating through my mind. I think the guy should have just taken a page out of Columba's dictionary and just, you know, shoved stuff down his pants. It'd be a lot easier.
The stealer man? The theft man?
Yeah.
Mr. Allen man?
Yeah, Mr. Allen man. I think he should
just... Well, that's... No. When you don't... That's what you do. You still have a soul when you do things like that. You still have a soul. When your soul has been eaten by an evil, sick, degenerate son of a bitch like Jesse Helms, you work out scams.
So, it's actually not his fault because his association with Jesse Helms has...
Well, if I wound up on Charles Allen's jury and knew the whole story, I'd acquit him. I'd say, well, they're extenuating circumstances. This man had his soul sucked out of his body one night when he was sleeping, and Jesse Helms ate it. So if I'm on Charles, Charles Allen, whatever his name is, if I were on the jury, I'd find him not guilty by reason of having his soul eaten. I have no problem with that.
Just checking.
All right, we have a break. And we're going to come back and take your phone calls. So if you want to bring up the Russell Feingold thing, go ahead. I spent a lot of time last couple of days with a lot of Russ Feingold fans in Wisconsin. And these filthy, chicken-ass Democrats did it again, didn't they? Huh? Schumer and Clinton and Biden and all of them. Just turn tail and run. What they're saying is, well, no, Russ, we can't introduce a censure motion because the Republicans will use it against us this November and we'll never get control of the House or the Senate. No, Russ, we can't censure the president because the Republicans will use it against us. Oh, Russ, please don't. Come on, don't do it. Feingold said, I'm amazed the Democrats cowering with this president's numbers so low. Well, don't be surprised, Russ. You and Kucinich and a couple other people, you're out there on your own, pal. You're out there on your own. You claim to be a Democrat just like I do, but you know the truth, Russ.
Got a monkey on your back. Just one more fix, love, might do the trick.
One hell of a prize for you to get your kid.
Listening to the Mike Malloy Show on Air America Radio.
Do you know the power of financial empowerment? Ambassador Andrew Young, humanitarian and educator, has teamed with Operation Hope founder John Bryant to help eradicate poverty through financial literacy education. Mr. Bryant, how is Operation Hope meeting this challenge?
To empower 5 million youth in 5 years in financial literacy.
Ambassador Young, what's your role in financial literacy education?
Well, I came up with Martin Luther King in the Civil Rights Movement, and now we're trying to develop a Silver Rights Movement. Young people in the system of free enterprise and capitalism need to understand money and how it works. It takes an army of volunteers. Business leaders, educators, the entire community. We need the community's help.
If you need financial hope, we're here to help you. Call Operation Hope at 877-592-HOPE. That's 877-592-HOPE. Or visit us online at operationhope.org.
Americans learn to speak a language, learn to speak Arabic. Those in the Arabic regional say, gosh, America's interested in us. They care enough to learn how we speak.
She's
Jesus. All right, let's go to the phones here. Chad is calling from Minneapolis. Chad, thanks for holding on. Welcome to the program.
Oh, yeah, man. I've listened to you for a long time on AM 950 when I was in the workhouse in St. Paul. And I remember the election and at 2004, and no one around me knew. There's 60 of us in this room, and no one around me knew what was going on. It was a pretty tough night, but that's when I first started listening to you, and I've listened to you ever since, and I got my brother listening to you in California.
Everything worked out okay?
I'm fine. I'm happy. There's a parallel that I just figured out when you were discussing it before, to Nazi Germany, and I guess the kind of euphoria that the Germans must have felt right after Poland, because it fell in like 6 weeks.
Yeah.
And I'm sure their newspapers were full of jingoism, no German said, yeah, we'll just take on the USSR tomorrow, right?
That came from the German high command because the Aryans, Hitler's Aryans, looked at the Slavic people as subhuman. It was necessary to kill, the Slavic people, whether they were Bulgarian or Yugoslavian or Russian or Georgian or whatever. So. But I don't know. The common folk in Germany probably didn't have any particular axe to grind with the Russians, no.
Right. But, I mean, then they had a peace pact, I guess, you know. But, if you would have asked your average German, they probably would have said, yeah, we got the greatest military in the world, just like they do now, you know. I mean, mm-hmm. I just think arguing with the stars is going to be...
Oh, no, don't start. Are you there, Chad?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, go ahead.
I think like our next war is going to be like the Germans' next war would have been the USSR, and now we're going to, you know, they're talking about Iran every night. They plug some Iran and the bomb thing on Fox, and you know,
I have a very strong gut feeling that the United States is not under any circumstances going to launch an attack against Iran.
Airstrikes, maybe. You know,
I don't even think that. They may try to prevail on the Israelis to attack, but I don't think the Israelis will either.
Probably, yeah.
I don't think they will. I'm sure it's already come up for discussion. This is not like taking out Saddam Hussein's nuclear reactor back in 1982 or 83, whenever it was. The Iranian nuclear program is scattered all over the country, and the country's huge. It's geographically three or four times the size of Iraq, and most of it's underground. In order to penetrate, in order to get down there, they'd have to use tactical nukes. And if the United States or Israel or India or Russia or anybody launches a nuclear attack against a country over something like this, it's all over. So there's the condemnation would be unbelievable, and the United States or whatever country did such a thing would become an instant kick them off the planet pariah. So no, we're not going to attack Iran. No way. Being used. That whole issue is being used, just like the Dubai ports issue was used. It's being used to whip up war fever. You understand this, Chad. This is what these sons of bitches in the Republican Party do every time there's election. It's either terror or war. This time it's the Iranians. When it was Key, the last time it was the Iraqis. And then there was the Axis of Evil. And then there was this. And then there was that. Pretty soon it's going to be Hugo Chavez. It's going to be Venezuela. Oh, no, it's Castro. No, we used up Castro. No, it's the Vietnamese. No, we can't use that. We do business with the Vietnamese now. So, no, this is BS of the highest order. We're not going to attack Iran. Not ever. Ever.
Well,
not ever.
Our empire is more economic anyway. I mean, I don't think we really have to take land. It's not so much about taking land. It's about controlling...
Well, yeah, you're right. It is economic, but you have to understand something. The people that run this country now have a bloodlust. They love death dealing. They love to do it. Rumsfeld...
Well, people are getting tired of it, I think.
Well,
I
think so. But you can look at Rumsfeld when he has these press conferences and he's talking about the dead. He gets sexually aroused. That's usually when he has to leave the podium. He starts pounding...
The whole bunch of, like you say, ghouls.
It goes beyond that. It goes into the most evil aspects. It's like sex with the dead. It's like necrophilia. When you watch Rumsfeld pounding the podium while he talks about this stuff, you know damn good and well what he's really pounding. Hello? You still there?
I'm still here. Just one last thing. Feingold it. Hillary is out. Every time I hear someone say Hillary is going to be the nominee, it makes me want to vomit. We still have a choice. You know, and we're winning, Mike. We are winning. The people around the world, I think, are winning.
Well,
you know,
we may
overall.
Win.
4,000 years ago, we were building pyramids. You know what I'm saying?
Well, I hear you. We may win, and then come November 2008, the Democratic Party will present us with a couple of losers. Now, I don't know that we're winning at all, but I'll accept what you got to say. Chad, thanks. Got to go. Appreciate your call. Sorry for the dial tones there. We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy.
They arrested the mayor for an illegal bail. They sold the Empire State to Japan. And Oliver North married Green Sea Court and gave birth to a little Tehran. And they hired a Tony aboard a nuclear warship. If he dies, he wants to go out in style. And there's nothing to eat that don't carry the stink of some human waste dumping in the Nile. Well, one thing is certainly true. No one here knows what to do, and I'm sick of you. I'm sick of you.
You're listening to The Mike Malloy Show on Air America Radio.
The following is a message from Brutus at the National Disaster Search Dog Foundation.
Last October, three buildings collapsed. I was called in to help. Two little kids were missing. I looked everywhere. Then I found them. They were crying. We all were.
Be part of the search. Call 1-888-4K9-HERO or visit searchdogfoundation.org. Made possible by Searchdog USA.
Now out on DVD. Good night and good luck. Nominated for 6 Academy Awards, including Best Picture, Best Actor, and Best Director George Clooney. A critically acclaimed award-winning film about the historic showdown between journalist Edward R. Murrow and Senator Joseph McCarthy. Peter Travers of Rolling Stone calls it an electrifying movie event, and David Anson of Newsweek hails it as one of the best movies of the year. Don't miss this brilliant, thought-provoking film, Good Night and Good Luck, on DVD now.
Some of the best minds in the automotive industry, using some of the most sophisticated design facilities. Engineers from Ford Motor Company are working together on a common mission, creating safer cars for our families and our children. Ford is renewing its commitment to driving American innovation. At the core of that effort is your safety, because every single life saved is worth it. Ford, driving American innovation.
More coffee, mister?
Yes, please. Oh, boy.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Hot coffee all over you. Let me get some paper towels and some cold water. Are you all right?
Why, I'm just fine, young lady. It's just scalding coffee.
Mister, you must be gelling.
That's why I'm not yelling, even though there's considerable redness and swelling.
More gel, more gelling. New and improved Dr. Scholl's massaging gel insoles. More cushioning. Totally outrageous comfort. To start gelling like never before, see the doctor, Dr. Scholl's.
Waitress, how about some more coffee?
We'll be right back.
times. Don't be afraid. Be very afraid. It's Mike Malloy on Air America Radio.
It's about 25 before the hour. I got an interesting email here. I'm not going to read it or even name the person that sent it to me, but the gist of what he's saying is that some of the topics I bring up in this program are horribly depressing, and it's difficult to listen to, and I understand that. I really do. You know, last Sunday night, I sat there and watched Tony Soprano get shot by Uncle June. And, wow, man, you know, is the guy going to die? What? I don't know. Do you watch 24? The television, the cop show, CSI and all this stuff, you know, crime scene investigators and cold case and this and that, all the dead and dying and death and murder. And, you know, it's fiction. And I guess that gives us the remove necessary so we can handle it all psychologically. And when I start talking about a bombing raid that nets 6 dead children in Iraq, that gets depressing. I hear you. Okay, moving right along. In 1984, we're all the way up to Chapter 13. Wow. When we closed out last Friday, I believe it's last Friday, Julia and Winston Smith had set up above Mr. Charrington's antique shop, their little room, their meeting place, their little pied-à-terre. Is that how you say it, Gabby? Pied-à-terre? And they had had their last meeting. And then separated. So here we begin Chapter 13. Sim had vanished. A morning came, and he was missing from work. A few thoughtless people commented on his absence. On the next day, nobody mentioned him. On the third day, Winston went into the vestibule of the records department to look at the notice board. One of the notices carried a print list of the members of the chess committee, of whom Sim had been one. It looked almost exactly as it had looked before. Nothing had been crossed out, but it was one name shorter. It was enough. Sim had never existed. The weather was baking hot. In the labyrinthine ministry, the windowless air-conditioned rooms kept their normal temperatures, but outside, the pavements scorched one's feet, and the stench of the tubes at the rush hour was a horror. The preparations for Hate Week were in full swing, and the staffs of all the ministries were working overtime. Processions, meetings, military parades, lectures, waxworks, displays, film shows, telescreen programs, all had to be organized. Stands had to be erected, effigies built, slogans coined, songs written, rumors circulated, photographs faked. Julia's unit in the fiction department had been taken off the production of novels and was rushing out a series of atrocity pamphlets. Winston, in addition to his regular work, spent long periods every day in going back through files of the Times and altering and embellishing news items which were to be quoted in speeches. Late at night, when crowds of rowdy proles roamed the streets, the town had a curiously febrile air. The rocket bombs crashed oftener than ever, and sometimes in the far distance there were enormous explosions which no one could explain and about which there were wild rumors. The new tune, which was to be the theme song of Hate Week, the hate song it was called, had already been composed and was being endlessly plugged on the telescreens. It had a savage, barking rhythm which could not exactly be called music but resembled the beating of a drum. Roared out by hundreds of voices to the tramp of marching feet, it was terrifying. The proles had taken a fancy to it, and in the midnight streets it competed with the still popular "It Was Only a Hopeless Fancy." The Parsons' children played it at all hours of the night and day, unbearably on a comb and a piece of toilet paper. Winston's evenings were fuller than ever. Squads of volunteers, organized by Parsons, were preparing the street for Hate Week, stitching banners, painting posters, erecting flagstaffs on the roofs, and perilously slinging wires across the street for the reception of streamers. Parsons boasted that Victory Mansion alone would display 400 meters of bunting. He was in his native element and as happy as a mudlark. The heat and the manual work had given him a pretext for reverting to shorts and an open shirt in the evenings. He was everywhere at once, pushing, pulling, sawing, hammering, improvising, jollying everyone along with comradely exhortations and giving out from every fold of his body what seemed an inexhaustible supply of acrid-smelling sweat. A new poster had suddenly appeared all over London. It had no caption and represented simply the monstrous figure of a Eurasian soldier, 3 or 4 meters high, striding forward with expressionless Mongolian face and enormous boots, a submachine gun pointed from his hip. From whatever angle you looked at the poster, the muzzle of the gun, magnified by the foreshortening, seemed to be pointed straight at you. The thing had been plastered on every blank space, on every wall, even outnumbering the portraits of Big Brother. The proles, normally apathetic about the war, were being lashed into one of their periodical frenzies of patriotism. As though to harmonize with the general mood, the rocket bombs had been killing larger numbers of people than usual. One fell on a crowded film theater in Stepney, burying several hundred victims among the ruins. The whole population of the neighborhood turned out for a long trailing funeral, which went on for hours and was in effect an indignation meeting. Another bomb fell on a piece of waste ground which was used as a playground, and several dozen children were blown to pieces. There were further angry demonstrations. Goldstein was burned in effigy. Hundreds of copies of the poster of the Eurasian soldier were torn down and added to the flames, and a number of shops were looted in the turmoil. Then a rumor flew round that spies were directing the rocket bombs by means of wireless waves, and an old couple who were suspected of being of foreign extraction had their house set on fire and perished of suffocation. In the room over Mr. Charrington's shop, when they could get there, Julia and Winston lay side by side on a stripped bed under the open window, naked for the sake of coolness. The rat had never come back, but the bugs had multiplied hideously in the heat. It did not seem to matter. Dirty or clean, the room was paradise. As soon as they arrived, they would sprinkle everything with pepper bought on the black market, tear off their clothes, and make love with sweating bodies, then fall asleep and wake to find that the bugs had rallied and were massing for the counterattack. 4, 5, 6, 7 times they met during the month of June. Winston had dropped his habit of drinking gin at all hours. He seemed to have lost the need for it. He had grown fatter. His varicose ulcer had subsided, leaving only a brown stain on the skin above his ankle. His fits of coughing in the early morning had stopped. The process of life had ceased to be intolerable. He had no longer any impulse to make faces at the telescreen or shout curses at the top of his voice. Now that they had a secure hiding place, almost a home, it did not even seem a hardship that they could only meet infrequently and for a couple of hours at a time. What mattered was that the room over the junk shop should exist. To know that it was there, inviolate, was almost the same as being in it. The room was a world, a pocket of the past where extinct animals could walk. Mr. Charrington, thought Winston, was another extinct animal. He usually stopped to talk with Mr. Charrington for a few minutes on his way upstairs. The old man seemed seldom to, or never to, go out of doors, and on the other hand, to have almost no customers. He led a ghost-like existence between the tiny dark shop and an even tinier back kitchen where he prepared his meals, and which contained, among other things, an unbelievably ancient gramophone with an enormous horn. He seemed glad of the opportunity to talk. Wandering about among his worthless stock, and with his long nose and thick spectacles and his bowed shoulders and the velvet jacket, he had always vaguely the air of being a collector rather than a tradesman. With a sort of faded enthusiasm, he would finger this scrap of rubbish or that, a china bottle stopper, the painted lid of a broken snuff box, a pinchbeck locket containing a strand of some long-dead baby's hair, never asking that Winston should buy it, merely that he should admire it. To talk to him was like listening to the tinkling of a worn-out musical box. He had dragged out from the corners of his memory some more fragments of forgotten rhymes. There was one about 4 and 20 blackbirds, and another about a cow with a crumpled horn, and another about the death of poor Cock Robin.
It just occurred to me you might be interested, he would say, with a deprecating little laugh whenever he produced a new fragment, but he could never recall more than a few lines of any one rhyme. Both of them knew, in a way, it was never out of their minds, that what was now happening could not last long. There were times when the fact of impending death seemed as palpable as the bed they lay on, and they would cling together with a sort of despairing sensuality, like a damned soul grasping at his last morsel of pleasure when the clock is within minutes of striking. But there were also times when they had the illusion not only of safety but of permanence. So long as they were actually in this room, they both felt, no harm could come to them. Getting there was difficult and dangerous, but the room itself was sanctuary. It was as when Winston had gazed into the heart of the paperweight with the feeling that it would be possible to get inside that glassy world, and that once inside, time could be arrested. Often they gave themselves up to the daydreams of escape. Their luck would hold indefinitely, and they would carry on their intrigue, just like this, for the remainder of their natural lives.
Time to make some change.
The Mike Malloy Show on Air America Radio.
Hi, I'm David Orrick. A consumer alert was recently reported in a leading consumer testing magazine. It warns, if you're sensitive to dust, avoid bagless vacuums. I would never make a bagless vacuum because they're filthy. My 8-pound Oric XL is hypoallergenic. Try one free for 30 days. Call 1-800-989-4200, 1-800-989-4200. You'll breathe easier knowing it's an Oric XL.
Have you experienced a random act of kindness? Someone you haven't seen for years suddenly come back into your life? Do you know a positive story that inspired or motivated you? Aleve invites you to share your good news at AleveGoodNews.com. For years, Aleve has been devoted to providing good news for people with arthritis pain. Now, Aleve invites you to share your good news at AleveGoodNews.com.
Use it directed for minor arthritis pain.
We'll be right back. End your day screaming with Mike Malloy on Air America Radio.
It's about 10 before the hour. Thanks to our production crew here. The program is engineered in New York City by Justin Yuen and our resident rock star Jason Isaac. Dee Neal is our associate producer in New York. She answered your calls and maintains the blog at airamericaradio.com/Mike Malloy. We may even write something for that tomorrow. The rest of our crew, Chris in Minnesota, Mark Marshall, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org, and Jim in Arkansas. The executive producer of the program is Catherine Day. See if we can squeeze in a phone call here. Anton is calling from Massachusetts. Anton, welcome to the program.
Hi, Mike. Thank you so much for being out there. I am of Russian Jewish extraction, and to tell you honestly, your interview with Mr. Markowitz last week and then you reading 1984 was almost too much to take all at the same time. It is... Somehow, you know, always hearing the stories of my parents living through Stalin's era and living through the war. I always had it since childhood. I'm 31 right now. I came here at 16. And somehow I always had it there. It's always on the, on the back burner. And it all came to the forefront recently, and hearing you do it, I was an emotional wreck after this. It was just too much to take. And what's most amazing to me right now that we live in a country that's slowly moving in that direction. I'm not sure how slowly anymore.
Yeah.
But and I'm wondering how some of my friends can be right wing. How can they not see what is going on? And I think perhaps because they don't know what tyranny feels like.
I think that's part of the problem. We've been told by our leaders for the past 70 years that we are the ones who fight against tyranny, no matter where we find it. That's what we've been told, and to a certain extent, I'm sure there's some truth there. But now, all of a sudden, we have become the beast that is stalking the rest of the planet. And it's a horrible about face. I think that's one of the reasons a lot of people remain loyal to Bush or loyal to this brand of conservatism is because they can't process the information that all of a sudden the beast slouching towards Bethlehem is not something else, it's us.
Yes, that's exactly my comment. And, in fact, you know, growing up in Russia, for us, America was always, perhaps illusionary, but it was always this beacon on the hill, the city on the hill to aspire somehow, be like Americans.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm an American citizen. I've been voting in the last several elections. I tell you, it's an incredible disappointment for somebody like me. And to add to this, if you know, all the Cubans in Miami are Republican, and a lot of Russians tend to gravitate towards more conservative politics because of such allergy they have to socialism.
Mm-hmm.
And I tell you, I never quite particularly felt the biggest affinity towards the Republican Party, conservatism as such.
Well, let me, Anton, if I may interject, there's an assignment for you in the Russian community, among whom I'm sure you have contacts among the Russian community. You need to explain to them that there are no liberals in any position of power in the United States, and it's a matter of degrees. The Republicans are fascists. The Democrats are not fascists, but they're not liberal, and therefore, the people who may have emigrated to this country and gotten citizenship and are ready to vote now, they needn't be afraid of the Democrats because the Democrats are not socialists. They're not even liberals.
Absolutely. No, I realize that, but I'm just telling you that a lot of my compatriots feel otherwise. You know,
yes,
those
right.
Who came in the 70s. And it's unbelievable to me where this country is going right now. Just overwhelming. Say the wiretap controversy. The most insulting thing about living in a communist society was absence of freedom. Not freedom, I'm sorry. Absence of privacy.
Privacy, yeah.
You know, such word as privacy doesn't even exist in Russian language. It's very hard to translate. It's, you know, the word will be privatnost, which is an English word.
Huh.
It has to be invented.
Right.
To be a private individual is not even a concept. And that's what these people are taking away from us now. The most precious jewel to me in the Western civilization is the idea that you can be who you are, to be
right.
a private individual. And that goes to anything, to not only political thought, but say sexuality, what we heard with 1984. To have an affair, you know,
mm-hmm.
like Winston and Julia. That was something that was absolutely impossible.
Right. And the fascism in this country is typical of any totalitarian fascism, if that's not redundant, in that it needs to get into every aspect of one's life. And I needn't tell you about this. You can educate me. You could educate your fellow citizens now here in the United States as to what living under totalitarianism is really all about. Even though Gorbachev tried to, with Glasnost and Perestroika, tried to ease whatever remained of Stalinism and Khrushchev and Andropov and some of these other people who must have driven the Russian people insane. It must have driven you all insane.
Well, I tell you how insane it was. Did you remember when Mr. Markovich was talking about being in Auschwitz, they still had no idea that Hitler was after exterminating every last...
Oh, my God. Hey, listen, Anton, there's the music. We have to go. Let me tell you this. Philip Markovich will be on the program tomorrow night for the third and final installment of his story. So tune in tomorrow night. And I hope you call again where we have some time to talk, okay?
I will try. Thank you, Mike.
All right. Thanks, Anton. I appreciate you being there. I'll see you tomorrow night, Truth Seeker. All right, take care. Watch your back. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Air America Radio.
Mike Malloy. On Air America Radio.
Are you losing your hair? Fight back with Avacor. Now with Boost, which gives you visibly thicker hair with the first application.
I'm 20 years old and I've been losing my hair for 3 years. I started using Avacor and my hair stopped falling out. It's working.
Well, I'm 72 years old and I can tell you honestly, I have a fuller, healthier head of hair now than I did when I was 18 years old. Avacor really worked.
Whether you're 20, 72, or any age in between, Avacor works. An Avacor Boost will improve your hair's appearance the same day you receive your order. Call now and find out how you can get 3 months of Avacor free with your order. Call 1-800-301-1420. That's 1-800-301-1420. This is a limited time offer, so call right now. 1-800-301-1420. That's 1-800-301-1420.